The Senate Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness will come to order. Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I always like doing some kind of reading on veterans, especially from books written by veterans. And this actually book was written by Paul Evans. And Paul Evans, I think many of us know, he's actually testified in front of this committee. But the reason I like this one little vignette, it's about followers. And for those of us who are on committees, we need to follow our chairs or our caucus leaders, et cetera. And I just thought that this was interesting because the military, you do have to be very good followers. And this is what Paul writes about following. There are just formal and informal rules associated with active followership. Followers listen before speaking or asking questions. Followers ask questions, but do so with respect, meaning some questions are asked absent a crowd. Followers understand there's a larger mission involved. Followers are not embarrassed about following. Followers prepare to step up when needed, and they take initiative to be ready when and if circumstances change. Followers know making the boss look good makes the team look good. Followers anticipate the next task and have a plan to execute it. So those were the words that were written in a book called Veterans Speak by Paul Evans, and I thought that was sort of apropos. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Some of us have a hard time following. Isn't that true, Mr. President?
Thank you for making me feel old.
No, I'm talking about me. I generally don't follow the rules very well, do I?
I'd be the last one to talk about rules.
Colleagues, members of the public, members of the audience, we have one bill that is posted today, which is SB 1506. You have actually a lot of people signed up to testify on it. This bill's been around a little bit. With that, I'm going to open a public hearing on SB 1506. And if you would bring us up to date to where we are, Council, right now.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1506 enables Oregon to join the Interstate Compact on Educational Opportunity for Military Children. There is a dash one amendment that, for the most part, inserts clarifying language to make the compact language specific to the state of Oregon, including replacing local education agency with state education agency and adding a definition, using Oregon's language to create a state council and clarifying the use of existing data rather than creating a new data collection requirement and a sunset of 2019. There is no revenue on the dash one amendment, and a fiscal statement has issued, which is on OLIS and available at the dais. So because of that, there is a recommendation to have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means that will follow the bill to the leadership office if it moves out of committee today.
Thank you. And before I briefly talk about the bill to keep efficiency going, and I do want to mention a few things, I'm going to call the first three individuals up to the podium here, Mark Sansusi, Rick Masters, and Kate Gavlik. If you want to go ahead and come up. And before we start that, colleagues, let me talk briefly about the fiscal, and then I'm going to tell you what it is, the amount. My understanding of the situation, we asked LFO to be watching the hearing, is that because this is a new program in Oregon, ODE was asked to look at it and provide information in, even though they're not mentioned in the bill. There was concerns raised by the Oregon School Board Association about it. And so it actually came, LFO presently has a fairly substantial fiscal on it. So therefore, it needs to go to Ways and Means, which is normally the procedure around here, which is perfectly fine. However, I believe what we're going to do is hear testimony about that fiscal, that there is no fiscal in the other 46 states per se, much of anything. And so if we get through the hearings and the committee wants to move the bill, then we can send it down to LFO or send it down to Ways and Means and then have several people work with LFO to come up with what the real fiscal is, and then at that point make a recommendation to the co-chairs of Ways and Means if we so desire. So with that, I'm going to go straight down the list simply as I have it in front of me. Actually, I'm not, now that I look back up, because we always let ladies go first. So gentlemen, you're going to have to wait, and the superintendent can go first.
Thank you, sir.
My name is Caitlin Gavlak, and I am the California Commissioner appointed by the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, and I sit on the Military Interstate Children's Compact Commission, serving as the vice chair of that body. The commission is the governing body of the Interstate Compact and is composed of representatives from the member states, as well as various ex officio members representing impacted stakeholders. The Interstate Compact is something that we are extremely proud of being a part of in the state of California, where we serve over 65,000 military-dependent children. As my appointment by the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, my time as the commissioner, as well as being in charge of the State Council, is all voluntary time. I convene the meetings. I work with the Department of Ed so that they post the agendas appropriately and so that they follow all of the legal issues that need to be met within the state of California. When issues come in to the Department of Ed, if they do not come to me directly as the commissioner, they simply forward those issues to me, and I deal with them on a case-by-case basis. I will copy the Department of Ed with information about what my response is or what the resolution to the issue was when we do have inquiries into things that need to be resolved between either districts or states. In my experience as the commissioner, I have had multiple phone calls with other state commissioners where it's simply been a phone call. I block out maybe a half a day a week of my time to deal with the compact issues for over 65,000 children. With that, there's very little impact on the budget. The Department of Ed appreciates the fact that I do it. All of my state council members serve in a voluntary capacity with either their districts picking up the pieces for travel or whatever, which is really minimal. We do a lot of video conferencing for meetings and things like that. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to address those.
Any questions you want?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So do you have, what other states do you have the compact with, or is this just within the state of California?
No, there are 46 states throughout the nation.
So you become a part of the whole United States.
Yes. Oregon is one of four states that has not yet signed on.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Other questions? Mr. President? Roland?
Who are the other four, ma'am? Or who are the other three?
Oregon, Minnesota, New York, and New Hampshire.
Thank you. Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rick Masters, and I am the general counsel for the Interstate Commission that was created by the legislation adopted by 46 states and the District of Columbia to administer the compact. I have had the privilege of testifying in Oregon before on other interstate compacts and have worked not only in the capacity as general counsel with this organization, but have worked with the Council of State Governments on interstate compacts in general and have had the opportunity to draft a number of them, several of which have been adopted here in Oregon, I'm proud to say, including the Interstate Compact for Adult Offender Supervision and the Interstate Compact for Juveniles. This compact was designed to remedy the problems that are experienced by children in grades K through 12 when they transition from one state to another due to the deployment of their military parent or parents. The data on which the compact was based was the subject of a study that was done by the Department of Defense in conjunction with Johns Hopkins University to identify the primary areas where military families who are in transition when a military member is deployed, and when they have to move from one public school district to another across a state line, what are the primary issues where they have problems. And we based the substantive components of this compact on those four areas. And those four areas where these kids have the majority of their problems are in enrollment, eligibility, placement, and graduation. And I'll give you just a couple of examples of the kinds of things that they run into. For instance, with enrollment, these kids frequently have problems when they have to move very quickly because their parents are under orders by the Department of Defense of getting the original transcripts and the original record so that they can enroll in the next state school district. This compact would provide that the unofficial record could be accepted by the new state to which the child transfers, and then the state from which they're coming would have 10 days to get the official record there. For eligibility, such things as, let's say your child is a 4.0 student who's in the beta club, and they missed the candlelight induction ceremony in the school district where they're moving to. And so they're told, well, you can't be a member of the Beta Club even if you satisfy the criteria. The compact would provide that if you otherwise are qualified, simply because you missed the induction ceremony wouldn't be a reason to exclude you from being a member of that extracurricular activity. Placement issues, in a similar fashion, we look at things like course placement and ask states to look at the credits that they've received in the prior state where they're transferring from to see if any of those can be given credit on an appropriate level in the state to which they move. We don't ask any state to give up its quality of education. You're free to retest these students, and if you think they ought to be in a different level or a different grade placement, you're free to do that after they move. But initially, the compact says that you'll presume that their grade level and their course placement will be the same as it was in the state they're coming from. And then for graduation, for example, we try to make sure that these kids have an on-time graduation and ask states to waive as many of the requirements as they can if the state that they're coming from has satisfied your criteria for courses that are needed to complete graduation. We ask that you consider accepting some national normative test besides an exit exam if you have one here. I don't know if Oregon requires an exit exam or not, but we ask that you consider waiving that. If the state decides we just can't waive a particular requirement, then we ask the state under the compact to work with the sending state that the child came from to see if they can get a diploma there. Because it's very important, as all of you know, to have these children graduate on time and with their classmates. We have not had a single state in the union that has generated a fiscal note of $250,000 or $300,000. I saw some of the emails because Cheyenne Ross was kind enough to share with us the language of the bill so I could look at that. I was on a conference call with Oregon DOE, a representative from there. I explained that this bill does not create a new bureaucracy that you have to fund. Every state that has joined so far treats this state council as an advisory group where interested stakeholders come together and meet periodically to discuss the business of the compact, but not as a decision-making body and not as a full-time employee of the state. The folks in the other states act as volunteers. I think they're paid a per diem in many states for their travel, but I don't know where the fiscal note would come from other than the dues. And we base the dues on a formula that says $1 per child of a military family in your state. For Oregon, that would be $2,000. That would be the only fiscal impact that I'm aware of. I'm assuming there'll be some economies of scale because, as all of you know, these kids are moving whether you're in the compact or not. So somebody with DOE and other agencies in this state are dealing with these kids now. So I'm not sure how you get the math that it suddenly increases to do the same sorts of things on a more organized, consistent basis, which we think would be accomplished by the compact. So I don't want to argue with your fiscal folks and say there won't be any fiscal impact, but I certainly am shocked at the amount, and I don't think there's any state in the union. In fact, I know there's no state in the union of the 46 that are members that have generated any kind of fiscal note in that realm. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. Be happy to answer any questions that I can.
I'm not sure.
No, I would like to talk. Can
Later.
You have legislative fiscal come talk to us?
We can do that, and I can bring ODE up, and they can also explain.
Oh, yeah.
It to
you. Okay. Yeah, that'd be
Senator
good.
Olson, okay.
Yes, thank you, sir, for your comments. I had but one question. You mentioned that the state has 10 days for the official record to be transferred. Are there any ramifications for the student if the state doesn't meet that requirement?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, I am not aware of any impact that has been experienced or encountered by a problem like that. I would defer to my colleague. Pardon me? I was going to say the parent is allowed to use photocopies of those records, so I'm not sure in the electronic age that this is nearly as much of an issue as it used to be, because these records can be transferred either by scanned and electronic means or otherwise, but I'm not aware of any.
Well, I would follow up. I was just concerned that, you know, that the child would be punished or penalized for lack of response by the state, and they're not. That's good.
Thank you. I would just comment, because I'm in a rural district, so I do have school districts that don't have internet, and they actually have postcard people going to them. So so we don't have internet in all of my district. Well, Mr. Sansuri, we've been a long time getting to this point, haven't we? So your turn.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Committee. For the record, my name is Mark Sansusi. I'm the Department of Defense Regional Liaison for the Northwest here in support of Senate Bill 1506, and thank you so much for taking this up and trying to move it in your compressed session this year. I was actually going to cede my time if I were first because we have such august expertise here. We also have Air Force Sergeants Association from D.C. who's the CEO. We have the U.S. Coast Guard family person who did a survey on families here, and we have a military parent army guy from JBLM to talk about a personal experience. So thank you for taking this up. And again, DOD has been working closely with RIC and CSG on this since 2007 to the point where we have had 46 states and the District of Columbia join, and would certainly be thrilled to have Oregon get on board. So I stand for any questions. Thank you.
Senator Olson? I do have one ask, and Mr. Sansui, it's news to him, but I'm going to commit him anyway because he's with DOD. And that is that if we do move this down to Ways and Means, we'll need a little more technical expertise in the nuts and bolts of how the system works to ensure that, LFO has adequate information to come up with a realistic fiscal, which we'll address towards the end of the meeting. But I would add that ask from the three of you for a little outside assistance, because as you see, and I have explained at least to two of you, we don't have a spare $350,000 sitting around. So.
Mr. Chair, on behalf of the Commission, we've got data from 46 states, and we'll be happy to facilitate any information that would be helpful to the committee in coming up with an accurate fiscal projection.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. President, any questions?
No.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the input. With that, I'm going to call Doc McCausland, right?
McCausland,
and then the Coast Guard. I'm looking down here. I saw a Coast Guard here, right here. Someone's from the Coast Guard here, too, right? Mr. Feldbusch? There we go.
Just not a Mr.
Mrs. Okay. Miss.
Yeah, thank you.
And I would take a stab at the first name, but I would butcher it because I'm just a simple peasant infantry officer. And we'll let the Coast Guard go first. Ladies first. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here this afternoon. For the record, my name is Denise Feldbusch, and I am with Coast Guard Work-Life Programs. I am the first work-life representative to be on a detached billet here in the state of Oregon. I've been working with the Coast Guard for a little over a year now. And when I first arrived, one of the first questions I asked was about the Military Interstate Children's Compact, and have been working with Mr. Sansusi ever since in an effort to advocate for our Coast Guard families. Late last year, in October, I conducted just a small sampling of our families. I conducted a survey regarding some of the challenges that our Coast Guard families may have experienced in the educational system and what recommendations they may have. Approximately 43 Coast Guard families completed the survey, and some of the challenges were, as have already been mentioned for a few, one being the transfer of educational records, another being the entrance age requirements that some parents have experienced challenges with, not being able to test their children to either enter kindergarten or to test for another grade level. Another challenge, and this is significant for our families, is support for children with special needs. Several of our families have experienced various challenges with different school districts requiring different things, not recognizing an IEP that may have come from a different state, having to go through the process again and really having trouble navigating through that process. Another challenge would be support for children during deployment. As you may know, we have many boat stations, surf stations, and cutters here in Oregon, and many of our Coast Guard parents deploy, leaving our children and families here. And we find that there is not a lot of education in the school system as far as how best to support military children who are facing a parent being deployed. Another challenge that our families listed was placement in appropriate courses, which has also been mentioned, that children coming from another state may have been in a gifted program or may have received services that might otherwise not be available here in this state. They also may not have the opportunity to test to be in those programs if they are available in the school. Another challenge is entrance and exit testing. Each state has their own requirements as far as they move through the grades, what is required to successfully accomplish the academic requirements and ultimately graduate. And many of our families have experienced challenges with either graduation requirements, whether it be a compilation of the senior project if they come in late, that they need to still be held responsible to complete that senior project, whether they come in senior year or junior year, or that their credits are not recognized coming from another school, or that they're required to basically redo history courses because they're not state-specific. And finally, I asked for personal testimony on the survey, and several of our families gave narratives about their challenges. And so, again, all of those challenges were represented in what the parents gave as their personal testimony. And really made recommendations as far as feeling that the compact would support their children as they PCS and move from state to state, that the compact really was necessary in Oregon to support as part of the military family.
Just one clarification for the audience, because three of us have already know exactly what you said, but PCS is permanent change of station, correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, permanent change of station.
So that people understand. Madam Vice Chair, questions?
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it. Mr. Chair, thank you.
Mr. Chair, what's an IEP?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I apologize for using acronyms. An IEP is an individual educational plan that can also be called an IFSP, an individual family service plan, which indicates special or supportive educational services that a child is receiving above and beyond what is normally given in the classroom. So it may be a child who is in a gifted program. It may be a child who's receiving speech therapy, any number of different things. It basically sets outcomes and goals for the special supportive services that that particular child is receiving.
Thank you.
Any other further questions? Doc?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Distinguished members of the committee, this is a critical subject, so critical to us. That's why I flew out from Washington last night just to be here for today and try to get back tonight if I can. We've been involved in this thing for about six-plus years, and we're up to 46 that have signed up to accept credits and accept graduation requirements, et cetera, from other states, because our military does rotate from state to state, either as IMAs or as active duty. Currently, I just wanted to add that there are 8,800 of Oregon school kids come from military families. 1,158 of those are Coast Guard people in your state. So we're affecting education of the kids of the K through 12 of military people that put their hand in the air and said, send me, I'll go. And so we don't want to punish the kids because of that. The only thing that I would add to the fiscal part is it's a $2,000 bill that you'd get. That's the dues every year. The rest of the stuff is handled normally with volunteers. In two states, I know that the commissioner is the state adjutant general, so you get two for one. It's a two-star Army National Guard person. And in California's case, you're getting two for one. So there is no real big fiscal thing. You can make a mountain of a molehill, but if we want to solve this problem, sign up to the compact. Like I said, I testify before the U.S. House and U.S. Senate every year on impact aid, of which Oregon gets for each of the kids that are in your schools. So it's not one of those situations where kids of military people are going to your school system and you're not reimbursed for it. It's the opposite. You are reimbursed for it under federal impact aid system. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you for the opportunity.
Questions, Clinton Buster? I just want to go back to, I'd like you to reiterate and make sure I understand what we're saying, and the Coast Guard can jump in here too. If you have a service member that transfers into the state, say from the Air Force down in Cay Falls or Coast Guard or something like that, is there a financial, does the local school district receive a financial advantage to that?
The DOD impact aid comes to the school district. That's why there's a survey among military families that the youngster brings home the form, fills it out, mom and dad sign it, sends it back, and those are collected on the DOD level. And that's what determines how much impact aid you get.
And Mr. Chair, on the Coast Guard side, similar. So we have asked, and the school districts are aware that they identify Coast Guard families as they arrive and transfer in. Mm-hmm. Our housing office or the North Bend housing office verifies that those children are indeed Coast Guard dependents, and then the school district can receive impact aid for each child.
And just for the record, and I'll just look for a nod in the back, I mean, roughly an estimate of about 2,000 in the state. Coast Guard's got 1,200, I believe you said, something like that.
Mr. Chair, approximately 1,100 active duty Coast Guard members.
Mm-hmm. And all coal active duty is about 2,000 in the state, which is where the $2,000 fee is. So we're getting a financial advantage for them coming already.
Yes, sir.
Okay. What is that advantage?
What Anybody have a guess there?
The best guess I can remember from the year 2012 was $37,500. Doesn't seem like much, but it's paying their way.
Per student?
No, that's the impact aid from the federal government.
Oh, to the whole system.
To your system in Oregon, right.
Any idea where that money goes?
I have no idea what Oregon does with it internally, sir. Okay. I know it is part of the federal budget because I testify on that specific issue each March, and I'll be testifying March the 6th. Mm-hmm. Just keep it going, because $150 million countrywide is earmarked for federal impact aid.
Okay. Well, thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you for coming out and testifying. Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you very much. We'll move on to the next panel. Donnie Thornton, Pat Williams. Is it Marion Caffey? I'm looking here. Pat Williams and his, help me out here. Is that Marion?
Marion County, meaning.
Oh, Marion.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, you're from Marion County. Okay, got it. Ladies first.
Okay. My name is Patricia Williams. I'm here in Salem, and I appreciate having this opportunity to speak to you, and I'm glad you're considering this bill. I'm a Army brat and retired Army wife, and I think that I agree with, actually, I must have misunderstood the focus of this bill a little bit. I thought it was concerning kids, military children graduating from high school here and being able to go into college with residents, you know, using the resident tuition, which I'm definitely in favor with because, you know, military families sometimes...
Just sit back a little bit. We'll hear you. There you
go. Oh, okay. All right. Thank you. Military families can be clear across the country from their home state or wherever their other family is. And in my case, when I came to the States to go to college, my parents were overseas. And it's very important that you would be able to, sometimes the child doesn't have grades enough to move to a university, but they can go to the local junior college, stay home. And so that was my understanding of the focus. But Mr. Masters brought up some real raw subjects that reminded me of some of my childhood. I remember I went to Fayetteville Senior High School in Fayetteville, North Carolina. It's now Terry Sanford High School for 2 years. And it was just outside of Fort Bragg, North Carolina. You all know where that is. And for a long time, half of the student body in the senior high school there was military. The other half was civilian. And, for example, very important clubs that belonged to the school, like the Key Club, et cetera, just froze out military children. And I think the final straw came when they had national merit the National Honor Society. No military kids were selected at all. And that's when the parents from Fort Bragg stepped in and made some impact on the school. So I know from being an Army brat myself that you move from school to school and sometimes the atmosphere is not very welcoming. So I encourage you from that standpoint also to endorse this bill.
We appreciate your testimony, and I spent a lifetime at Fort Bragg, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I've been there many times.
Got a vice chair question?
No, but thank you for participating.
Sir, do you want, please?
My name is Donnie Thornton, Sergeant First Class in the United States Army, stationed at Joint Base Lewis-McChord. This bill would have helped me twice so far. Once when I moved from North Carolina to Washington in the middle of school year, we had to move my daughter to Oregon for one semester because of the timing that I was moving. So she did one semester in Oregon. Getting her credits transferred over from Fort Bragg, North Carolina to Oregon took a long time. It was a very painful process, and I actually ended up at that time flying my wife out here just to meet with the high school principal so they could work this out. And it turned out to where my daughter ended up losing a lot of credits that she had to make up then when she moved back to Washington with us. Had we had some type of military liaison, like we do at Joint Base Lewis-McChord that works with Washington State school systems, to help ease that process, that would have been a lot easier. My daughter would not have lost credits. She wouldn't have had to retake classes because Oregon did not recognize some of the classes that my daughter took. One case in point, she went from honors algebra in North Carolina without any type of testing. They said, oh, her school district did not recognize the honors algebra, and she was put in, I believe, two levels lower, which she had done 2 years prior to that. Nothing we could do. We had to accept it. Had we had that liaison to help with that, that might not have been an issue, and that wouldn't have happened. Most recently, I've moved again back to Joint Base Lewis-McChord because I left again. My son is 17 years old. He has special needs. He has Down syndrome. He does receive an IEP, as the lady from the Coast Guard was talking about, where he has certain things that need to be implemented by his school. Since being in the school district in Klamath County, he's faced some pretty serious discrimination and civil rights issues. I tried to work with the school district on that, then went to our military schools liaison office who works with the people in Washington State. She attempted to reach out to different various groups in Oregon. Not successful. She attempted to reach out again. It wasn't successful to the point to where now we're at. I had to file a complaint through the Oregon Department of Education for civil rights, also through the Federal Civil Rights Commission. This has taken hours and hours and hours talking with different investigators. The state of Oregon has burdened the cost of hiring the investigators, appointing people to this case and looking into this. So the state's occurring these costs that it takes to do all these investigations, when I truly believe that had my military advocate that works with the compact been able to work directly with the district, we could have solved this at a lot lower level and it never would have had to gotten here. It would have saved me a lot of time. It would have saved me a lot of time at work. I've taken numerous days off traveling back and forth just to deal with these issues. And I believe a lot of that could have been mitigated, and a lot of the Oregon State resources wouldn't have had to have been used.
Thank you, and thank you for your service, Staff Sergeant. And I apologize on behalf of the state of Oregon for what your daughter is going through. So.
No, and it's stories like these that come from you that have a real strong impact on why things need to change for the betterment of our students, whether they're military or not, but in this case, military. So thank you so much, both of you.
Is there also a question?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, thank you for your service.
Thanks, sir.
I'm going to ask ODE to come up, if they would, so we can talk briefly about the fiscal. And if you would not mind joining them, Mr. Masters.
Sure.
And we did ask that LFO kind of pay attention on the internet or communications or wireless or whatever we have here so that we can...
And Mr. Chair and Madam Vice Chair, members, they did offer it. They've got, of course, 2 days of work sessions left, so they are overwhelmed, to say the least, to follow up with you individually to answer any questions you might have about the fiscal. But
Okay.
Breaking at the seams.
Right. And again, I think, you know, if the bill does move, it has a subsequent referral down the Ways and Means, and I believe Senator Devlin will give us an opportunity to resolve the fiscal if we need
That's
to. I do want to put on the record, when this bill first came out,
in this latest iteration that the Oregon School Board Association raised concerns about it, and then there were concerns about ODE, Oregon Department of Education raised concerns, and I think, for the record, I didn't have very kind things to say about either of those entities in writing, which is part of the public record. Both the School Board Association and the Department of Education have tried to figure out what it is and remedy those things. I do want to say before I ask ODE to explain how we got to the fiscal that, you know, they were asked by LFO. I don't believe they're actually cited in the bill, so they're kind of shooting in the dark here, which is why I asked Mr. Masters to come up here. So they can kind of, maybe ODE can give us just a brief background of how they got involved, even though they're not named in it, which then resulted in the fiscal, and then maybe Mr. Masters can give us some suggestions to the committee members and ODE, and if not, maybe the military department elsewhere, a way forward if we decide to move this bill. So I'm going to let somebody from ODE tell us how we got here, and it wasn't of your own fruition. So you're getting a pass here, all right? So,
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, for the record, Jan McComb from the Oregon Department of Education, and joining me is Emily Nazarov, who actually did the fiscal impact statement. One of the issues when we first looked at the bill and had a fruitful discussion with Mr. Masters was that there wasn't language in the bill that actually gave any state agency the responsibility of managing the council and hiring the military liaison. And so that was something we suggested be remedied. And the, as Chair Boquist has said, Legislative Fiscal Office reached out to us and asked us what our fiscal was. And so it's somewhat hypothetical. So assuming that the duties came to us, this would be what our fiscal was. We got the amendments yesterday and looked them over, and based on the words in the amendment, we came up with our fiscal. And I don't know, Emily, do you want to talk about what was included in our fiscal and what wasn't?
Sure, and I'd like to also start by saying that it was...
say your name first.
Oh, Emily Nazara, for the record. It was difficult to write this fiscal because after having the conversation with Mr. Masters and Mr. Sansucci, it was very clear that other states had not had a large fiscal. But when I looked at the actual words of the bill and what it required of us, I didn't see how I could get around the fiscal that I wrote. So the way I read the bill was that you have a compact commissioner, and I assumed that that would be an existing person, maybe a Deputy Superintendent Rob Saxon or something like that, and it could be absorbed by their time. The bill then requires that we appoint a military family liaison, and we had some discussions in our conference call about whether that would be best in the Oregon Department of Education or in the military agency, but if it was in ODE, we thought it would be a 0.5 FTE ed spec, and that person would do the military family liaison role and providing guidance to districts. The bill then creates the state council. And when I looked at that originally, I thought that the ed spec could be raised to a full-time ed specialist, and that person would spend 50% of their time administering the state council. When we got the amendment said that the state council would appoint a director and that the director would have hiring and supervisory authority. And so after conversations with the fiscal people in our office, I raised that to a manager F, which is the lowest level manager that would have hiring and supervisory authority. So I tried to phrase this fiscal very much as I recognize that ODE is not named in this bill and that responsibility is not given to us, but if it did fall on us, this is what we would do to staff this.
Okay. Mr. Masters, a question for you. And I'm just going to throw two states out, but we have another fiscal that's out there right now. Connecticut and Colorado are roughly the same size as we are, so I'm going to guess roughly, just population-wise. Can you give us an example of some states and how does it operate and how is it financially paid for in those states?
Well, first of all, Mr. Chair, with all due respect, DOE, I'm not aware of any state that has created its own additional, I would call it a layer of bureaucracy or administration within the department to manage this or hire a full-time person to do so. I don't think there's any other of the 46 states that have done that. They have all used some variation of what was done with Commissioner Gadlach in California, who is a school superintendent with a full-time job, who does this as a volunteer and works, I think, about one day a week was her testimony or something to that effect.
Half
a day a week. In some cases, and it's up to the state of Oregon whether you want to manage it through DOE or through some representative of the military through your state
How's it done elsewhere? Can you give us examples?
One of those two ways. The majority of states, I think, do administer this through an employee of the Department of Education, but in every case I'm aware of, it's either a deputy superintendent, as Emily said, or a deputy secretary of education, or a superintendent such as Commissioner Gavlak, who already does that in the context of a job they already have. This other agency or director, maybe I missed something, and I may have missed that redraft, but I'm not aware of any state that has had this state council formed as some agency that would have a director that would have to be hired on a full-time basis to do this. And again, these kids are being managed by somebody now. I don't know who's doing it now in Oregon, but I'm assuming somebody at either the district level or somewhere in the Department of Education is at least aware of these kids, because if they enroll in public school, I think you got responsibility for them, whether you're in the compact or not. So I'm not sure how we take an ad hoc series of kids that are moving anyway, and you put them all together, and now you've got a new agency with a director that's being hired to manage them. Again, I certainly you're free to do that if you want to, but I don't know of any other state that's doing it that way.
Well, from the chair's observation, since the staff sergeant Thornton's presentation, I'm not sure we are managing them. So, Madam Vice Chair, you have a question? Okay, Council, you had a question?
Mr. Chair, I thought I might offer clarification, members of the committee, that the addition of the director position in the amendment, I think, could be an error on the part of the drafting, because boilerplate language may have been used for the creation of a council. Oregon has a certain template that they follow for that, mm-hmm. and it's one of those things that if we had more time, of course, would be something that wasn't contemplated.
And I realize you're fiscal analysts, and you're not policy people over there at Department of Ed, but I mean, this is working in 46 states. They don't have directors, so on and so forth. It was here in Oregon either, and I'm not blaming you, either ODE or Oregon School Board Association, one of the amendments from the original draft. And so we got to where we are from a bill that's working in 46 states that doesn't have a fiscal, and correct me if I'm wrong, Council, it was a combination of School Board Association and Department of Education kind of wanted, but they're the ones who wanted the amendment, correct? The present amendment we have before us.
I believe they've made suggestions, sir, yes. Members of the committee, this time the same as the two previous times that the compact was suggested.
And Mr. Chair, if I may interrupt,
please.
The commission is observing this by camera, and I've already communicated by cell phone or texting with our...
You and NSA?
Our wonderful technology. No, I have asked them to get in touch with either Cheyenne, if necessary, or with Emily or Jan to give you any information you might need, and the two states you mentioned might be good examples. I think we could probably even produce the fiscal notes of any that those two states, Colorado and Connecticut, have generated. That would be helpful. So.
Madam Vice Chair. Mr. Sansuri, you want to come up? And ladies can stay, and Mr. Master, you had a comment?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair, Mark Sansusi, Department of Defense. Just to help with your question to Rick, Washington State, I live in Washington State. I was involved with a task force for a year and then involved with Washington State becoming a member in 2009. The fiscal note they had was $32,000, because that's how many active duty kids, so their dues are $32,000. The fiscal note they created in 2009 added a 0.2 FTE and assigned it to OSPI, our state's Department of Ed. The commissioner is Greg Lynch, who's a retired Army Ranger guy, who is a school superintendent, and also now he's with the ESD. He's in an ESD, so that's his full-time job. He goes to the commission meetings and CSG pays for the expenses of the commissioners to go annually, but he is that person full-time in the ESD. But I do, in fact, remember the 0.2 was all they added in the fiscal note in Washington State with 32,000 kids.
Well, thank you. Madam Superintendent, would you come up here? Okay, you're a real person that does this. Everybody else here is a bureaucrat, either from the agency or the DOD.
Yes,
how does
sir.
This really work in California? I mean, obviously, did somebody reach out to you and said, would you please do this? I mean, can you give us any background? I mean, 46 states are doing it. You're doing it. Can you give us a functional way this works?
It's been a long go in California. We actually passed the legislation in 2009. I've been sitting on the commission for the last 3 years. And we had some issues. We did the task force. We got the legislation passed. We went through all of that. And then they were looking for somebody to be the commissioner. And, of course, I raised my hand because I've been very involved in this from the beginning. I am a full-time superintendent at Travis Unified School District in California, and 34% of my students are military-dependent children.
Travis Air Force Base. Okay, right.
Travis Air Force Base, yes, sir. And so I've been very, very involved in this from the very beginning. When we were working on the legislation and getting that through and figuring out who was going to pay for the dues, I did a lot of walking of the halls and talking to a lot of people throughout the state. And this is an issue that I think is very, very important to California because we do have over 65,000 students who are involved with this. And so my board was certainly willing for me to take it on. They know that this is something that's very near and dear to all of our military families. And so they supported me in that. But the reality is that I block out a half a day a week to work on this, and sometimes I don't even need that much time. The state council meets every other month. We were working on a report to the legislature for a while. We've completed that. Everybody has volunteered their time. The Department of Ed, the individuals whom we work with, set up make the reservation for the conference room, for the video conferencing room when we need it. They post the agenda and they do the minutes. Basically, everything else is driven by me and my staff in my district. The other superintendent that is on the council also volunteers his time. The other members of the council volunteer their time. If they can't be at the Department of Ed for meetings, then they can go to a video conference center and we can do it like that. So we've tried to minimize the costs, the impact on people also, but it's really a labor of love for all of us, and it's something that the people who have been involved in are extremely passionate about it. We have a large contingent of Marines in the southern part of the state. We work with the school liaison officers. We know each other really, really well. They call. Sometimes I have to make phone calls on their behalf to another superintendent or to assistant superintendents to say, come on, we need to do the right thing for children. And really, that's what it's all about for everybody in California who's involved. And sometimes it takes a little charm or a little arm twisting, you know, but usually not more than a 10-minute phone call and we have the issues resolved. And when it involves other states, the same thing. I pick up the phone, I call a fellow commissioner, say we have an issue with this district, with this student. They'll get on it. They'll call me back and say it's been resolved. Everybody's happy.
Minister, so what we're really saying is we're pretty small. You know, if a commission met once a quarter, mm-hmm. and what you're really saying is if it's an issue, you're the focal point, basically the ombudsman, for a better word. And when Staff Sergeant Thornton had a problem, he would call. Mm-hmm. You know, and probably does he call the state agency, and they call you, and then, for better word, you just pick up the phone and call the superintendent as a volunteer and say, hey, are you aware this is the way it should be, and you guys need to fix this?
That is correct. And when emails come through, because now a lot of people communicate that way, if they go into the Department of Ed, they just forward them to me. So it's just a pass-through.
Well, after this testimony, and it seems like task force have been a part of this in every other state, and because it seems like our ODE is sort of in the dark of, you know, how this would really, what would be the best way in this state to work, I'm just throwing it out. Would it, at least in my committee, my health care committee, I just designated, rather than passing a bill, a work group under the direction of our ABLE committee staff to resolve or come up with a plan on how this would work in the state of Oregon, because we don't have a large base. We have our Coast Guard on the coast,
And then...
We've got recruiters and Air Force.
Recruiters and Air Force, yeah. Yeah, but I don't know. I am concerned that I don't want to have this go to ways and means because it will die unless we come up with a plan that is really can be implemented in the state for a nominal cost, which obviously it should be. Just a thought, whatever the committee wills.
I'm wondering if we send it to Ways and Means and see if we can come up with a plan. If not, we go to Plan B, which is we still have legal hearings left, and we can form we can take action. And I'm quite certain I can probably pilfer a bill from the chairman on the far side to make a task force happen if we had to do that.
And Mr. Chair, we really have the power you do to formulate a non-statutory work group too. If we get to that and don't have a bill.
I know beforehand ODE has committed, and I've just committed them again, and I know that OSBA is willing to help because I've already talked to them, and I know that we can get organizational and DOD help to try and figure out over the next week or so if there's how to proceed on this, whether it be a task force or whether we kind of need to reorganize downstairs. And I'm quite certain because there is strong interest from two other members of the Ways and Means Committee on this bill, because, of course, this didn't come up. Senator Roblin, as you know, brought this up, and Senator Johnson was interested in this bill, too. And so I think we have the horsepower to do something with that.
That sounds great.
So what I would do is, I mean, obviously, we'll see what comes out of the work session, but it's pretty clear that we've heard this before. This is not new. This ought to be able to have a simple fix to move it forward, and the worst case is, you know, created into another task force with the intent of your task force being charged to figure out how to implement it. But what I'm not comfortable with is dropping the ball once again. So with that, Madam Superintendent, I appreciate it. I think you know where I'm coming from, right?
Chair Boquist, I do hear you, and I feel like I was negligent in not thanking Mr. Sansucci and Mr. Masters for meeting with us on the phone and talking through some of these issues, and I know they alleviated some of our concerns that didn't make it into the fiscal.
Right. Thank you very much. I don't want to be remiss because I heard two things here, and I don't want to put them on the spot, but I don't want them to be left out either. I heard there's two mechanisms for doing this. This is either done through ODE or various departments of education, and then I also heard that TAGS got saddled with this too in various places, adjutant generals in the military department. And I just want to make sure the military department doesn't want to make a comment, since it sounds like somebody's talking about you too. You're fine. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, colleagues. If we want to proceed, go to work session or.
I'm comfortable with going to work session. I always hate to send down a messy bill to Ways and Means because they aren't policy. They really can't come up with a task force. But I think let's give it a shot to see if something could be worked out. But I think it would take, and if you say that there really are some people on Ways and Means that like this. We know that bills have been amended or changed or whatever in Ways and Means. They don't.
It's
like
not
to
often,
do that.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it would be up to council here to work with the various stakeholders to see if there's something that can be worked out, because obviously we're not in a position to be asking the co-chairs to meet this fiscal.
I'm thinking of the student and especially Mr. Thornton's child, and then the Army brat. The longer we delay this, the harder it is for families and their kids. Not all kids, but I think it's definitely a need in this state.
Okay, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing, open a work session on SB 1506. Council, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. 1506 work session, right?
Yes. You mean to solicit the motion, sir?
Right. Okay.
I do have a question. Chair Boquist, before I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments, does the Dash 1 mess it up even worse?
than the way it is now? Or we only have the fiscal on the dash ones, right?
We only have a fiscal on the dash ones. I'm not sure, Madam Chair, I'm not sure the dash ones aren't the problem. I'm not looking at saying the dash ones might have screwed the whole thing up to start with. But it is what we have a fiscal on, and of course we could suspend the rules for the fiscal and send it to Ways and Means and not adopt the dash one, but the question is the starting point for the folks downstairs.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll check quickly if there's a fiscal on the bill as introduced. So your alternatives are, I can't recall.
But that is a good point.
Because, see, the dash ones actually establish the new state council duties, appointment, term, confirmation, per diem, the employees, the qualification of members, qualification of members, yeah.
Is there a fiscal in the original bill?
I'm checking now.
Stand by, Madam Vice Chair. It might be cleaner to set a bill down without the dash ones and then say, okay.
And then they could adopt the dash ones down there.
Well, we know the dash ones aren't going to work the way it's written. Probably no. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Madam Vice Chair, from your chair position, I believe with a two-thirds vote, we can move it two ways and means without a fiscal because it's going to Ways and Means.
And this is our last day, and I'm...
All right, we're at a dead end here. And the other advantage, Madam Vice Chair, is if we send it down there and people don't like it, they're more apt to work to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just would hate to put the dash ones in because...
Is there a fiscal?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there's no statement of any kind. No request was made on the bill as introduced.
I think ODE can respond to that.
Yeah. Does ODE have an answer on the fiscal? Was there a fiscal statement issued on the original bill?
Oh, sorry.
Oh, I don't know. We might not. We're really mucking this
up. Chair Boquist, so. Members of the committee, we did do a fiscal on the original. Emily Nazara, for the record. Mm-hmm. Sorry. The only difference between the one that's in front of you now is it was a ed specialist as opposed to a manager F, so it was a lower pay scale. Mm-hmm. And we did not include travel mileage reimbursement and per diem in the original fiscal. Mm-hmm. The amendment says that the members are entitled to reimbursement and compensation, and so we added that amount into the second fiscal. Does that answer your question?
It does. So, Madam Vice Chair, just Senator Cordon to catch up here, it would seem if we want to try and fix the bill, which our committee staff will have to work with the stakeholders in Ways and Means, it would not be prudent to put the dash one amendment in because we've got amended already down there if we're going to do anything with it. So we would have to suspend the rules because we don't have a formal fiscal, even though they submitted it, and it is going subsequent referral to Ways and Means. So I'm thinking procedurally, as we were explained in the committee chair's meeting, we would need to suspend the rules to move it to Ways and Means without a fiscal. Then we would probably adopt the bill as is, send it down there, and see if council here can work with the stakeholders to fix it. And if we can, we go see Senator Devlin. If we can't, it dies. If it dies, we then use one of our other hearings to appoint a work group. You follow where we're going, Mr. Senator Cording. So, Madam Vice Chair, what's your pleasure?
Do I suspend the rules?
You would move to suspend.
Suspend the rules first? Or,
right.
Okay. Chair, I move to suspend the rules for the purpose of sending, I'm having counsel tell me what to say, sending Senate Bill 1506 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means without a physical.
Physical purpose fiscal. Of the rule suspension.
What?
We just explained this. Okay, Madam Vice Chair, correct me if I'm wrong, is moving to
suspend the rules.
The rules because we don't have the original fiscal on the bill.
But we
with the intent of passing a bill, which we would do later, okay,
which
and sending it to the floor with a due pass with subsequent rural ways and means. So at this point, the motion is simply to suspend the rules, which requires a two-thirds vote, in order to be able to move the bill to Ways and Means at a later point. That's the motion, correct?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Okay. To your motion?
I feel that the Dash 1 amendments, which we have a fiscal on, complicates the issue because the Dash 1s isn't really the framework that's been conveyed to us by others that we need to implement this in the state of Oregon. So that's why I don't want to put the Dash 1s in. And according to ODE, the original bill had a fiscal but just wasn't issued, except that it, and maybe you have it. It was a lesson.
I don't have a copy of the original fiscal with me today. I do.
So it's
the discussion is that, and it would require a two-thirds vote of the committee to suspend the rules to move the bill without a fiscal, because we're at the last day. The bill has to be worked in Ways and Means. It would have to be worked by our staff and others for Ways and Means. But if the Dash 1, which we do have a fiscal, would have to be amended out. There's sort of the discussion. Senator Courtney, comments, thoughts?
Well, yeah. I'm a proud member of the committee. It wouldn't do anything to hurt you, Senator Olson, or Senator Neumeister, as a member of the committee. I wear another hat. So I do want to reserve the right, Chair, without you going completely crazy within 24 or 48 hours of the remainder of my life. If after I get through doing whatever I'm about to do or not do, that I can modify it if in the other role I play I feel that I have to do that in order to accommodate this session. It's a very general statement. That's all I'm saying to you, because I'm having trouble catching up with everything I'm doing here. I'm very aware, you know, of deadlines, obviously. This is the drop-dead date, you know, what's going to Ways and Means, what's going to Rules. So I'm very aware of that. I don't want to make a mistake and set a precedent. All of a sudden, I got 10,000 chairs in my office, not that you care, saying, well, you did this for Brian, and you did this for this group. So I'm a little nervous at all that I'm hearing here. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm going to say. So I'm down here. I was told I have to come down here. I'm here, and I don't want to mess things up as a committee, because we've stayed together as a team. But you've got to let me say that for the record. You've got to let me reserve the right as a presiding officer. If after this is over, I have to say, Brian, I got to talk to you. You can't do it this way. That's all I got to say to you. Hello?
Okay. Well, further discussion, Mr. Chair.
Oh, I was in the first point, but go ahead, Madam Vice Chair.
Well, I mean, we can pass the Dash 1s and let Ways and Means just change it. And then we're following the rules. I mean, I can't.
Right. My understanding of, just to clarify for the record, my understanding of the rules is in order to move a bill without a fiscal, because of technical issues, it requires two-thirds vote. At this point, there is a subsequent referral on the bill already to Ways and Means. We
yes.
have requested that. That's been approved by the presiding officers.
Then why don't we ship it?
Okay.
Well, that's what we're both.
Okay. Then I would like to rescind my...
Withdraw your motion.
I would like to withdraw my motion.
Your motion's wrong.
To rescind. All right. Because we have the... I don't want to upset the President of the Senate.
Well, you're not...
Chair Boquist, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 2/10/2014.
Vice Chair Montes Anderson moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 2/10/2014. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'll make it clear in understanding that when this goes down to Ways and Means, that this Dash 1 can be removed and we can remove that larger fiscal?
That's affirmed. In order for the bill to go forward, because the chairs will have to prioritize downstairs funding for any bill that has fiscal on it.
Right.
I cannot, as the chair, for the record, and I've told the proponents this, I cannot give the co-chairs a letter that says you need to fund this because we don't have the money.
Right.
So it will have to be amended in Ways and Means in a manner that can be implemented properly without a fiscal. So if it goes to Ways and Means and we can't figure out how to amend it, there will be no letter to the co-chair of Ways and Means saying, please fund this. It'll be the exact opposite. We understand you cannot fund it and you should not fund it. So it's going to have to be worked in Ways and Means process by our staff so it is efficient downstairs. So what we have right now, just to stay within the bounds of the rules, is, as you know, we're adopting a Dash 1 because we have the fiscal for it, but we know it cannot be funded downstairs and it will have to be amended again. That's where we are discussion-wise.
I would like to point out, though, that I would be more comfortable if you chair would state that there will be a work group if this cannot, if the, today, since we this is our last day to move bills, that there will be a work group on this issue if we aren't able to resolve the problems in ways and means.
Well, Madam Vice Chair, as we get farther along in the amendment process, I'm going to do better than I'm going to appoint the work group. Mm-hmm. Right here today,
okay.
Because we're going to have a work group to fix this for Ways and Means, or it dies in the Ways and Means process. It's that simple. So we got to have a work group now to either fix it. If the work group fails, then it's going to be a work group that has an extended amount of time.
Great. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Is there any opposition to adopting the Dash 1 amendment? Seeing none.
So moved, Madam Vice Chair.
Chair Boklas, I move Senate Bill 1506 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Madam Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves SB 1506 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Before I say, is there discussion? That has already been cleared with the President's office. We have already coordinated with this. The bill is supposed to be referred to Ways and Means, so we're simply following the policy. Further discussion? Madam Vice Chair. Senator Courtney?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Please call the roll.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Monis Anderson?
Aye.
Chair Boklas?
The chair votes aye.
The bill passes. It will be, the motion does pass. It will be sent to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Before closing the work group, at this point, I am going to ask that the Department of Education volunteer a body that will work with council here on this bill. I am going to ask that the military department have a representative that is available to work on that same work group for this bill. I would ask that the Compact and Mr. Masters have someone that can provide it, and I would invite at his leisure, if you'd like to, Mr. Sansui, who has pushed this bill forever, if he would like to participate in that work group too. Seeing nobody disagreeing with out there, I will work with counsel on the work group too to referee between everybody, and again, members, if we can get an amendment and we can get it through Ways and Means, we will do so. If not, then we will take this on into the interim. With that, the work session on 1506 is closed. Madam Vice Chair, anything else?
Thank you very much.
President?
No.
With that, the hearing for today will be closed, and I don't know what bills we have coming next week, so please stand by.